Okay, now I wanted to ask you about that famous incident in the, which is, well,
39
series. Nerino Lombardi dropped the ball at the plate or lost it and a couple of runs came in.
Yeah. Well, I know he was, I think he was made to go to that series. You know, they always pick a goat in the series, and I think he
was... Oh, made the goat.
Goat.
Oh,
made
I
a
see.
Goat to someone,
yeah.
Made the,
yeah, I see,
big foul up. But I don't blame Lombardi, because Keller hit him first, and he hit him hard, and he hit him in the groin.
You mean Keller sliding in?
Yeah. Well, he came in more of a blow, and Lombardi was blocking, and he hit him. I mean, you know, Charlie Keller was built like a tank anyway.
Yeah. He could run.
And he could run, and he blasted him hard, and... hit him in the groin, and in fact, Lombardi, I think, was partly paralyzed when he was laying there on the ground. The ball, we could see the ball from the bench.
Uh-huh.
The ball was laying right along his side.
Huh.
But he couldn't handle himself. He didn't, he was more or less helpless. Yeah. And we were screaming from the bench. Well, there should have been a ball player on that club in there getting that ball. I think, I don't know whether it was two or three runs scored then. I know one of them stepped over Lombardi to step on the plate. I think it was DiMaggio.
Is that right?
It was Keller, DiMaggio, and wasn't there three of them come in on that?
I don't remember. Two or
I
three.
I think there was, yeah. But they had to, the two behind Keller had to step over top of Lombardi to tag the plate, because he was more or less out there. And I was, I couldn't see that making him the go to that series.
He was pretty badly hurt, huh?
Yeah, he was hurt. You know, you get hit and hit hard like that, why, you're more or less paralyzed.
How was he that night?
He was all right that night, but,
okay.
Yeah. But he was a great catcher, and he was one of the greatest hitters I've ever seen, yeah. Too.
Two batting championships, didn't he have?
Yeah. And if he could have run, he never bunted in his life. But if he could have run a little bit, he would have probably hit 400. That's the way that everybody in baseball felt about him. And when they played him back on the grass, all the infield. I can still see, well, in fact, Chioza was with the Giants. Lou Chioza was back on the grass in left field playing third base, and Lombardi turned him a flip-flop. He threw him out at first. And I don't know whether it was that road trip or another one that Fitzsimmons was pitching for New York, and he knocked Fitzsimmons off the mound, broke his hand, and he threw him out. Then we were in Chicago one day, and Larry French, remember him, the left-hander, was pitching, and he blasted him off. The ball flew 20 feet, I think, in the air, and came down, and French threw him out at first base. And if he would have had all the hits that were actually base hits,
yeah.
He could hit 400. He was that type of a hitter, and he was a great fella. I mean, especially like if you're throwing bat in practice. Now, we had young guys on the club, and they were afraid to throw bat in practice. You know, when Lombardi would come up, and I'd tell him, I said, he's not going to hit through there. I never saw him in bat practice hit through that box.
Huh.
He could have. He could have tore you out of there, because you're hitting, throwing half speed and over the plate, see, in there.
Yeah.
Normally, but he'd either pull or hit down the right field line. He wouldn't go through the middle. And I used to tell a couple of young pitchers, said, "Gee, why did I ain't going? He'll tear my leg." I said, "He's not going to hit through there. Don't worry about him." And I never worried a thing about him ever hitting through that box.
Was his slowness a handicap as a catcher?
No, I wouldn't say as a catcher, no. He could handle himself behind that plate.
And big enough he could stop anything.
Yeah. And then, too, he had one of the greatest throwing arms, which was detracted from him, I think, on account of his hitting. No one noticed it, but he had a very accurate and a good arm. Now, he wasn't, he didn't throw hard to second base. He was one of the easiest throwers second base, but he snapped that ball down there. He got it away quick. For as big as he was, he could get that ball down there quick. And he could set it on his haunches and throw to third or first, and I've seen him do it a lot of times. And when he first came up, see, he was with Brooklyn when he first came into the league. And Wilbur Robison was managing Brooklyn then. And he wanted to make a pitcher out of Lombardi. when he first came up, he really did. He had such a good arm, see, and he could throw curves. I've stood on the mound during a ball game, you know, you throw your warm-up pitches, and you'd throw and then you'd say, go on to second base, Delam. And he always threw this big out curve, and Fry was playing second base. He'd come over, he'd come way to the left of me, and come sail and come right down on that bag, and I'm
right around.
Yeah, I could still see Fry laughing, sitting, holding his hand there on the bag. That was during a game, you know, and he'd throw that ball and he'd curve, big swing curve. And he got a big charge out of that. He got a big kick out of that. He was quite a guy.
He's awfully bitter now, you know.
Is he?
He's broke out in California.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I saw him in 1960. See, they had a reunion for us down in Cincinnati, and we were all there. Every man on that 40 club was there, except three had died, Jim Ripple and Morris Arnovich, and there was another one that died. But all the rest of us was there. Gabe Paul had us all down there. Yeah, we had quite a time down there. Then we played a game that night before the San Francisco Reds game. We played a game among ourselves, see. And, yeah, I know. Why has he come out in statements or something about him? I've never seen nothing about Lombardi. I mean,
there's something in the Sporting News a year or so ago.
Oh, was there?
He felt baseball passed him by, or he hadn't been recognized or appreciated.
He was working at a service station
out there, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Just trying, barely getting by. Kind of a sad story for a guy who'd done so much for baseball.
Oh, he's a great ball player.
Been so good.
I heard that he had tried to commit suicide.
Yeah, I guess maybe.
That was before we went down there in 1960.
Is that right?
Now, when I was down in 1960, I was with him quite a bit, and he seemed all right. I mean, I didn't. But at that time, now, he was in the press box. See, he lives at Oakland. Now, he was working in the press box during ball games, whether it was Oakland or San Francisco, I don't know, one of those clubs. And I said, "Oh, you got a good job, Lom." And he said, "Yeah, I make $12.50 in the afternoon." So I give the kid takes me over half of it. He does the work. I don't know what it was. Give him taking care of the sports writers, I suppose, sandwiches and stuff, or something like that. I don't know.
But how big was he?
I'd say he was around 6'4", maybe a little more, and around the strip about 240. He's a big man.
Was he muscular or?
Yeah, and
pretty well proportioned.
Well, yeah, he was at that. Mm-hmm. He had awful big hands. Oh, his hands, and I used to get a kick out of him. These fingers were all split. He kept tape around them. They were more or less in two parts. You know what I mean? They had healed and healed wrong. And he used to get them, and it'd hurt me if I was out there and he got one, and he'd go, you know. But we used to do it just for the heck of it. Walter started doing it first, and I did it several times, but he'd get lazy in the last part of the ball game and call for a lot of fastballs because he didn't want to shift on the curve, see. You know, catch him more or less that shift over to the outside on a curve ball. So Walters, he used to look in the bench and grin, and I'd say, "Now, watch this," and Buck would throw one way outside, and instead of going over with his glove, Lom used to reach out like that, and you'd hear it crack just like a rifle.
Barehanded.
And he'd fire back at you, say, "Get the ball over," grumbling, you know. You had to turn around on the mound to keep from laughing, you know. But I'd do it every once in a while, and Walters used to do it quite a bit. He got a charge out of it. He was too tired or too lazy to reach over, see, with that glove in, and he'd just go out like that. He wouldn't move his feet, so he had to go out with his right hand. Yeah, he was a good one. But he was quite a hitter, and he was a good catcher. And like I say, he had one of the best throwing arms in baseball for a catcher.
Kind of a guy was Bucky Walters.
Great guy. Buck's in Philadelphia now. I talked to Aiken, you know. Bucky had sent his uniform down there, and Tom Aiken said he'd talk to him over the phone, and Buck was fine, and said, "Tell Whitey hello when you get down there." I haven't seen him, I haven't seen any of them since 1960. I hear from him, I hear from Juice, my wife, and I hear from Juice and his wife.
Where is he, in California?
No, he's in Hawaii. He's in a sporting goods store over there. Yeah. In a store of some kind in Hawaii, Honolulu. Yeah, they'd went over there, they've been over there now 4 or 5 years. And Derringer, I don't know, I've never... Now this Aiken was down here about a week ago, he said that they can't find Derringer or something. I mean, he was supposed to live in Sarasota, Florida, but he evidently, he said he talked to Vandermeer. I know Vandermeer lives in Florida, and Vandermeer said he didn't have any idea where he was living, so I don't know. I know Johnny's in Tampa, I think, Tampa, Florida.
Is Derringer bigger than Lombardi?
Well, he is now, I know. He weighs about 400, believe me. When we went down there in 60, I think his shirt was a 52. They made him a special shirt. He must weigh 400. I don't know what he weighed. But he's,
in his playing days, they're about the same size? Or?
Yeah, height, yeah. I'd say they're both about the same way. Uh-huh. Both big men. Yeah.
Do you ever have any umpire problems, that is, with called pitches? Or?
No, I didn't. I never had no trouble with umpires. The only umpire I ever had trouble with was in Newark, New Jersey one night when I was in an international league. I'll tell you who was umpiring. Remember Cal Hubbard, the old football player? He used to play the Detroit Lions, and then he went to became an umpire in the American League. Well, he was over there umpiring. That's before he went up to the American League. And he was umpiring back the plate this night. And I thought I was getting strikes, see, and I rushed in a couple times, and Hubbard, guy, get back on the mound. And he looked, if you looked at Hubbard, he looked with all that paraphernalia, he looked about that wide, you know. So, I don't know, it was late in the game, he called one, and I run off the mound. You said, I'm blind, and boy, he walked out behind the catcher, he said, get back on that mound, you busher, I'll lock you back there. And he looked like a big tank walking out there. So I turned around, started backing around. I still was cursing him, see. And he was following me. What do you say, kid? I said, I'm not even talking to you. He's a big man. I wouldn't want to tangle with him. No, I never had any trouble with umpires.
I think they're pretty good.
Yeah.
They do a good job.
I think umpires, that's a tough job. I mean, it's so easy to be wrong, you know what I mean? So I think they do a terrific job. The umpire I got the kick out of was old Clem. You remember him, old Bill Clem? And you didn't argue with Bill Clem, because he had his hand up, but if you even started opening your mouth before he said anything, you were out, you know what I mean?
What was it, some word, if you called him?
Catfish. he'd clean the bench on that word. We had a pitcher by the name of Barrett, Red Barrett. He just came to us at Cincinnati. And he was riding old Clem one. We told him one day, I said, get on that umpire. I said, boy, Clem was back to the plate. So Red was on him, and Clem never looked around. He said, I know your voice, Mr. Barrett. And he said, you better keep quiet or out you go. Well, Barrett kept quiet for a while, and I said, call him Catfish. He called him Catfish, and boy, that mask flew off, and he came over, and he just cleaned the bench. Hey, he didn't, where he got that name, I don't know, but...
Barrett, he let it stay in.
Yeah, no, he cleaned the whole bench. Barrett was on the bench, yeah. See. Yeah. Oh, he didn't like that. Now, I don't know where, what...
I know, I've heard that story, but I've never heard why.
And with Dean, you know, when Diz would charge him, Clem used to walk up and draw a line with his toe and say, cross over that line, Diz. And Diz would get up to it, but he never got over it, you know.
Did you know him very well?
Yeah, I knew Dizzy pretty well, yeah. He was quite a guy and a great pitcher. Yeah, a great pitcher, terrific pitcher. In fact, I picked a team the other day for, I don't know, some fella sent me a thing to pick an all-time all-star team. And I picked Hubble a left and right-hand pitcher. I picked Hubble. Al Hubble is a left-hander. And it was debating between Dean or Feller. I finally picked Feller. But you could have went either way there. But I was going by Feller's record. You know, you have to almost pick him as one of the greatest all of all time. I would.
Of course, I grew up in Cleveland. And that was my team.
Yeah.
And I saw Fowler pitch a lot. I always wondered, why his earned run average was always so high? He was such a great pitcher. Why didn't he have a lower ERA?
What was his ERA? I think
it was over 300.
Is that right?
Points. I'd have to check now. I don't think he ever was under.
I would have never thought that would have been that high.
Even his great years, he was over. Of course, ERAs were higher than generally. But, of course, he won a lot of ball games. He would have won a lot more if not been for the war.
Well, maybe it's because he pitched a lot of low hit games.
Yeah.
But he walked a lot too, you know. And when you walk maybe two in an inning, somebody bangs one, there's a run or two coming in. And I don't know.
I always thought he was inconsistent. He lost a lot of games too.
Yeah, he lost.
127, lose 11.
Yeah. But I was just going. I didn't know whether to pick Dean or pick him. I think in
any.
Can't
go wrong.
No, I. Then I picked Hubble over Grove and some of them. I mean, that was maybe I shouldn't.
But I interviewed Lefty Grove last year. I just got him in time.
Yeah, was he sick then or what?
No, he looked great.
Is that right? Well, Ruffing looked great the last time I saw him. But my God, that day at Newcomers Town, I seen him, I couldn't believe it. See, I talked to him up in New Philly here just a couple years ago. And I made the remark to some of the fellows, I said, boy, Red looks like he could go nine now. I mean, he looks good, you know.
And he's had two heart attacks, two strokes.
Shoot me, Christmas.
Lost a kidney, I think.
I'll be darned.
We interviewed him. I spent an hour or so at his home. Yeah. Very good. I mean, he could talk.
Yeah.
And his right arm was used. His left arm was totally useless. So that was, as we saw there, it was strong, you know. That was his wife does an amazing job. After him, tell me, did you ever hit any batters in the head?
Yeah, I hit several.
Did that shake you up at all, or how do you react to that?
Well, I've been hit a couple times myself. The one that I hit that I I never hit anybody I threw at. I threw at batters, but. The one that hit that upset me the most was happened in a spring training game coming north with Cincinnati. We were with the Boston Red Sox. We were playing at Duke University at Durham, exhibition game. And you remember Mel Almeida?
Yeah.
Was with the Red Sox. Supposedly one of the best looking young outfielders that had come up in a long time. And he was a left-hand hitter, but he had a habit. If you pitched him up in here, when he took that ball, he'd drop his head. You know what I mean? He wouldn't pull back or move back from the plate. He'd drop his head. And I was pitching that day in Durham, and he came up to hit, and I threw a fastball tight up in here, and he dropped his head, and I hit him right there. And that ball didn't bounce. It just hit there and fell. And because I walked in the home plate, he was laying there. I said, oh my God, I thought I killed him. And I walked back to the mound. And because I remember Boston had Bing Miller was coaching first. Remember him? Because he charged me. He said I was throwing at him. We got kind of a scuffle there in the mound. Well, Grove and that bunch said they broke it up. They said, hell, that kid, he ain't throwing at him. And they knew that the habit he had too. Well, he was in the hospital down Duke University for I don't know how long, quite a while. And he came back to Boston, but he was gun shy. I mean, I talked to him. He knew I wasn't throwing at him. But he told me that he felt good up there, but he just couldn't stay up there anymore. I mean, he was, well, then he came over to Brooklyn. Then he went around two or three clubs and drifted out. And I always, in my heart, felt real, real sorry for him.
Yeah.
But it was unintentional, it wasn't intentional, and I don't know, something like that, you know, kind of hurts you pretty.
I talked to Leroy Parmalee. Do you know Parmalee?
Oh, yeah.
He hit five people in his career. He was very wild, you know.
Yeah.
Five of them in the head.
Yeah.
And he says he just couldn't pitch anymore that day when he hit a guy.
Well, yeah.
They
don't make you feel good, no. You're not feeling very good. I know they took me out right away. I left the ball game right away, and I was glad I did.
Yeah.
And I checked out the hospital. We were there the next day yet. I couldn't get in to see him, but I'm, you know, and I called several times after we left there. But I was worried, plenty worried.
Yeah.
But because I knew I hit him hard, because when you hit a fellow and the ball glances, but when the ball hits there and then just drops, you know you're hitting, it's hitting pretty hard. But I know the day I got hit one time, and that the time I was telling you about in Manassas, I knew the ball hit me. But when it hit me, it just like a ball of fire went down my spine into my backbone here. Just like, I don't know, just then I went out. But I knew it, I felt that, see. And I knew the ball when it hit me. And I was trying to outguess that pitcher, because I'd been throwing it to him and I figured he was going to throw at me. But then this catcher, when I came up, said something to me. He said, "You better watch you, so-and-so, you're going to get your head knocked off." And I said, he couldn't hit me with a handful of buckshot. Well, then he had me 2-2, and I figured, now he's coming, going to curve me outside, and I'm going to really rip one off, see. And I did. I tore into it, and he fastballed me and hit me there. So it was my fault.
Yeah.
I mean, but I was just figured in my mind, I was a young man, and I figured, well, now he's, that catcher's doing that, and I think he's going to curve me outside, and I'm really going to.
Did you ever get hit on the mound from a batter ball?
Oh yeah, I get hit. I lost my front teeth that way, and was coming north one spring. Jimmy Fox was a hitter, hits the ball. Now, you know, the ball wasn't hit hard. The ball was hit in front of the plate. When it came off to me, it was on a big hop. Well, instead of spinning normally like a ball should, the ball was coming like a knuckler, like this. And I looked at it like that, and I batted at it like that. Instead of taking my glove up and catching it, I batted at it twice, and it come through my hand and hit me right in the front, in the mouth, knocked them two front teeth out. Everybody's roaring and laughing. I'm backing up from the ball, swatting at it like I was. Yes, that's about the only, the worst. I've been hitting the legs quite a bit, but I mean, never serious or anything. Old Musial hit me before the 42 series in batting practice. Almost tore my left leg off, hit me on the knee, but.
How about sore arms?
Never had a sore arm. My arm is never sore. Then my arm, where I would get sore, wouldn't be my arm, it'd be in my chest here after a ball game. I suppose it was from, you know.
You knew Pinky Schaffner?
Oh yeah, from Cleveland. Where does he live, in Cleveland or where?
North Madison, Ohio. That's east of Cleveland, about 30
Aiken
miles.
Was down there about a week ago, and he said, see, Aiken's from Cleveland up there.
Yeah, I know. I went over to his house the other day.
And he said, where does Schaffner live? I said, around Cleveland. Yeah. Well, he said, I can't find him anyplace. And I said,
I gave him his address. Because
you did?
I've seen him. I was there last fall. Had a real good interview with him.
Is that right?
It was great.
Yeah.
He lives out there.
Was he married? He's not married, is he?
No, he has a lady friend.
Housekeeper, more or less?
Yeah, she lives in a little cottage next door to him.
Oh.
They go a lot of places together.
That's at Madison.
North Madison. It's just about 5 miles north of Madison.
Well, now what is, how far is that out of Cleveland?
Must be about 30 miles. It's around, between Painesville and Ashtabula, right along the lake.
Is it on a lake?
Yeah,
on the lake?
Right on Lake Erie.
On Lake Erie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been here several times. Now this girl was with him. I didn't know whether he was married to her or she's originally from around here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, isn't she Frances? She's from. She was George's. What's his name's sister?
Is she George's sister?
Well, that's who I thought.
Well, that she was connected with the family here.
Yeah, she's. I thought she was originally from here.
Yeah, she visited relatives here.
Right, did he give you any stories, Milt? He'd have a lot of them.
Yeah, he had some great stories.
Huh?
Yeah, a great story. The first time he appeared in a big league game, he faced Babe Ruth with the bases loaded. Struck him out.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, a great one.
I worked against Ruth only in spring training and stuff like that, exhibition games. But I always thought he was about the best.
I guess I don't have that here, but yeah, I had a real nice chat with him.
I think he was about the greatest to me. I don't know.
The Babe,
yeah. I mean, like I say, I only pitched against him in spring training and exhibition games. Yeah. Never during a regular game, but I think one of the biggest thrills I ever got at baseball was the first time I ever pitched to him. Now, he never got a hit off of me, but I don't know, I just got a big thrill out of seeing him stand up there.
Yeah, I bet it was.
You know, when you're a young kid, and I thought he was terrific. I still think he's the greatest.
Well, after 40, you're 41, 42, you didn't pitch much there and then went to St. Louis. Did you have arm trouble or something happen there?
No, in 41 I didn't pitch much in 41. In 42 I went to St. Louis, see. And I didn't pitch much at St. Louis club, only in relief.
Did they get some other pitchers in?
No, they had, that club was set when I went over there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At Cooper, Beasley,
Ernie White,
and I never started a ball game. I relieved in about, I'd say, 25 ball games, relieving.
Were you traded or sold? Or?
No, I was traded in a trade. Yeah. See, the Cincinnati club traded. Lombardi went to New York. Derringer went in Flash in 42. Derringer and Myers went to Chicago. Gleason went to Jimmy Gleason. I believe he went. I don't know where he went. I went to St. Louis. It was about six or seven of us left in 42.
Why did they break the team up or something?
Well, I don't know. I know there was about six or seven of us left the club in 40. See, in 41 we finished, I don't know what we finished that year. I think we were in the money, fourth place maybe. I don't know. Maybe, I think we were in fourth that year. After winning in 41, then we dropped back to fourth place or something like that. And I know there was seven or eight of us left the club.
I was trying to figure out why you didn't pitch as much in 41.
Well, that's what I say. I wasn't in many ball games in 41.
Is there McKechnie still manager?
Yeah, he was still manager there. And then 42, I know I didn't start any for St. Louis.
Who was their man? Was that
Southworth, Billy Southworth.
How'd you like Billy?
Oh, liked him very much. He's dead, isn't he? Yeah. Oh, yeah, he'd be dead.
Yeah, I never saw him.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. And then in 43, see, I was in the service, 43, 44, 45. I came back in out of the service in January 46. I came out of the service.
In the Army or the?
Army, yeah.
You overseas?
Yeah, I was overseas, I'd say 2 years, I don't know, 30 months, something like that. Yeah. And then I went with Rochester, New York.
In 46?
46, yeah. I was going to quit. I wasn't even going any place because, I'll tell you, during the service I didn't get to play, you know. Because I went with overseas with the unit, and we went to England, and then we were all the way from England on. The war was over.
Do you think you'd have been in the big time longer if it hadn't been for the war?
Oh yeah, I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I...
You're still not even 30, were you?
Oh yeah, I was 30...
According to which date you were born by here?
1912, yeah, now, don't 30, forget. Yeah.
But you still would have some...
Oh, I was...
Years.
Wait a minute, I didn't get out until 46, so...
Well, I meant if there had been a war.
Oh yeah, I would have been playing, yeah.
During those years.
Well, then when I didn't even figure on playing when I came back in 46, and St. Louis called me up and wanted me to go to Rochester, so I went and played that year with Rochester, then I quit.
Could I fix you a bologna sandwich?
You want a sandwich of some
no,
kind?
Thanks.
Well,
I
is
mean,
that all the meat, ain't there
that's
cheese?
That's all the meat I got right now is bologna.
Well,
I didn't mean to get into
your... How about a cup of coffee
here?
Or...
Well,
what do you
coffee
got?
Or Pepsi or...
Or Pepsi or... Coke?
Well, it'd be fine, a cup of coffee if...
Cup of coffee?
Well, sure. Well,
I bet you didn't get any milk, did you?
No. Do you use milk?
Yeah, it's all right.
Oh, gee.
How about, would you rather have Pepsi?
No, coffee would be very good.
Black?
Yeah, it was
good. Be black. Oh, my golly.
You know, we don't use much milk.
No, we don't use any milk, are we? I never use it.
Well, I use some of the cremate and stuff they stick in. So, I just wanted to finish up your career here a little bit more. Did you play with Rochester in 46?
Yeah, I was with Rochester. Mm-hmm. Played for a good man over there too, Burley Grimes.
Oh, yeah.
He was our manager.
A spitball pitcher.
Yeah, great guy.
Mm-hmm. He's still living.
Oh yeah, he's out in
northern Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah. Yeah, he and his wife were very good friends of ours. I thought a lot of Burley. Tough old boy. Mm-hmm. And he made the Hall of Fame too, I see. Mm-hmm. I was glad to hear that. He's quite a guy.
Yeah. And how did you do at Rochester?
Oh, I couldn't tell you what my win and loss was. I didn't win too many. Mm-hmm. I won a few starting, relieved quite a bit. But is that all the stuff we got to eat in there?
Is there any cheese?
Yeah, there's cheese. You want a cheese sandwich?
Okay.
Give me. I think there's cheese. Look in there.
Well, I think you ate it.
I did not. You see, now he knows better. You're the one that should take care of the food and stuff, not me.
Yeah, I have got a little bit of baked ham.
Well, then, give him a baked ham and cheese. How's that?
That'd be great. I didn't mean to run into your lunch.
No, I don't eat. No, I don't want any.
You like onion? We got a good onion.
Hey, you.
No, thanks. Just a small sandwich.
No, we're big eaters here as a rule. No kidding. We eat too much, in fact.
How about mustard on it? You like mustard?
Yeah, a little bit, please. Well, what did you do after that then, in Rochester? Was that the end of it?
I came back, yeah, and I managed a theater down here. They had theaters here then. They had three of them. I managed these theaters for several years.
You mean 46 was your last year in baseball?
Yeah, that was my last year with Rochester. And then in 47, I had three theaters. Two in Yorksville here and one in Denison. I managed those for about 3 years. And then they went under. The one burned down, the big theater. Then they took the other two out. Then I went to Sewer Pipe. I worked Sewer Pipe for 4 or 5 years, about five, and then I went up to the job I'm on now, Warner Swayze, up here at New Philly. They make construction equipment, the Great Alm. You've probably seen them, haven't you? Gradall.
I think so.
Yeah, well, they make that up there. They build that. That's it's built. And I've been up there now going on 21 years with them.
When do you retire?
Well, I'm 63 now. I could retire, but I'm waiting. I'm probably good till I'm 65. I feel good. Mm-hmm. And don't get around like I used to. I don't hunt like I used to.
Did you hunt throughout your baseball career in the
off
season?
Oh, yeah, hunting, fishing, that's all I did.
Is there any other ball players around you'd go with? Or
Well, I spent a year or two in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Went down there in the winter. Mm-hmm. And the town I stayed in down there, Lon Warnicki was there, Sammy Hale, and Dickie hunted down through there. And I used to hunt with him. Then I'd go to Pennsylvania and hunt deer over there with Joe Beggs, was over there. Remember Joe?
Yeah. He was with that great Newark team.
Yeah, he was there, Atlee Donald. And then I went to hunt in Michigan. But at that time, I had a lot of good bird dogs. I hunted birds all the time. Birds and stuff like that. Quail, pheasant.
Thank you very much.
She's starving.
Francis, is there any chance of me getting a cup of coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to ask you when you got married.
1939. 39? Yeah, don't you remember?
Did you meet through baseball?
No, she's a local girl here, and I just come home and she chased me a lot. And And we got married, and we have a daughter and three grandchildren. In fact, we're going over there Thursday morning.
That's in Pittsburgh, huh?
Well, it's at Elizabeth, on the other east of Pittsburgh, Elizabeth, Pennsylvania. And the boy, he's in the subservice, submarine nuclear subs. And he's home now on leave, and he just got home. Well, she talked to him today on the phone, so we're going over Thursday morning. Oh, I don't do much. I have a garden. I like to garden. I have a garden.
How about your interest in baseball? You kept that up?
I know. I don't. Well, I watch a game now and then. Uh-huh. But as far as going to a game, I haven't seen a game since 1960. Uh-huh. And that was when I was down in Cincinnati for the homecoming. And I haven't seen a game at all. Gabe Paul, when he was at Cleveland, he used to... Well, my daughter would go up. She lived in Lorraine then, and he used to tell her to tell me to get up. He wanted to talk to him. I never went up, but it don't interest me. I like football. I love football.
She went to see Gabe Paul one time when they were a game. Went to his office. Of course, it'd be hard to get into, you know. And it's clear out in the top of the stadium, isn't it? Why?
Yeah.
Was, anyway, she's. To his secretary, I suppose, she told him who she was and that she wanted, would like to talk to Mr. Paul. Sent for her right away. She went right in.
Yeah, she was tickled to death.
And he told them whenever they won tickets, just to call.
And what did you think of the World Series that your husband was in? Did you attend those games?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The home games, I did.
You like baseball?
I liked it. Mm-hmm.
You're on tape, you know.
Did you watch him pitch much?
Couldn't stand it.
You did or didn't?
I couldn't. If I knew he was going to pitch, I didn't.
You weren't there. Is that right?
But I was caught in the World Series. I mean, I couldn't get out of watching him then.
Why did it make you nervous?
As soon as I saw him going in, I told the woman who, the one girl on one side of me was Jim Turner's wife. And I said, oh, I said, Whitey's going to go in. I thought Joe Beggs was going in. And I said, oh, Whitey's going to go in. I said, will you please excuse me and let me out? And she just had a fit. She said, indeed, I won't let you out. You sit there and watch it. She said, Jim's been in baseball for many, many years. And she said, he's never been in a World Series game. Or never pitched in a World Series game. So I watched it.
Well, did you travel around a lot?
No, she never went on any road trips or anything like that.
I think I took one trip to
Chicago.
Did wives do that usually?
No,
not too much.
No.
Of course, most of them went to the World Series and
in
the other towns, but I never did for some reason. Well, I went to Pittsburgh a lot when you were
there. Yeah, she had always come to Pittsburgh. See, that's only 90 miles.
But living so close, that we would come home, you know.
Did you have an apartment in Cincinnati during the season?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, does anything stand out as your greatest thrill over all your years in baseball that we haven't touched on? Or?
No, I can't say. Probably the no-hitter, probably the series, you know, would probably be the most outstanding. And, I know for years I was picked on the all-time Syracuse team over there. I used to get every year they would send me a form that I think I was a right-hander and Grove I think was a left-hander. See, Grove played in that league, Baltimore, when they were in the International. I got a bang out of that.
Must be in the all-time All-Star Cotton States League.
Well, probably if they got one, I imagine. I don't hear much from down there anymore. Mm-hmm. But I've had a lot of fun out of baseball. I mean, but it doesn't, anymore, I kind of more or less forget about it. I bet people don't let. I mean, you know, I get an awful lot of mail now. I get probably get more mail now than I did when I was playing ball. I was surprised. I mean, it's. I just sent a letter off today that a fellow with pictures, you know, the autograph and stuff and things like that. And I get quite a lot of that anymore. But I don't know. Last night I watched the ball game, Boston, the Red Sox.
That was quite a boy. They got a good.
Yeah, they got a good ball club. I'm surprised.
Did you ever pitch in Baker Bowl? I wanted to ask you that.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of that as a ballpark?
In Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know, the old little.
Well, that was that was really something. I wanted to tell you a story. Maybe you've heard it about. Remember Boom Boom Beck, the pitcher?
Yeah.
Did you hear how he got his nickname?
Well, I've heard some stories. I'd like to hear you tell.
Well, he got that the way I get it now. He was with Chicago then when Hack Wilson was with Chicago. And whenever he pitched in Baker Bowl, they said that right field tend to just rattle. That's where he got the name Boom Boom. But the story they tell about Hack was on the 4th of July, a doubleheader. And I guess the first game, Hack had run himself ragged out there in right field, you know, and the ball hit up there, he'd run and get it and throw it in. So about the 5th inning of the 2nd game, why, they called time. Fletcher was managing Chicago. He called time, was going to take Beck out. And he, when I walked out the mound, well, Hack turned around and he leaned up against the fence and was taking a break, see? And Beck got mad because Fletcher took him out, and he turned around, threw the ball, and hit up on the tin, and Hack heard it, see? And he whirled off the fence and fell down and spiked himself when he fell. He got up and chased the ball, got it, and they said throw his perfect strike in the home plate, see?
I never heard that one.
Didn't you? Well, anyway, he was going to kill Beck then. Boy, he was mad. Well, I played in the old Quaker Bowl. And I was over there one day. Morris Arnovich, who later came to us, was playing left field for Phillies. And our bullpen, and I was with Cincinnati, and he was down left field. And Morris had his hands down his knees like that, hollering. He was a great peppy guy, you know. Well, over there in Quaker Bowl, the sun had come out, and those June bugs would come up out of the ground, you know. You know, there was big, hard-shelled bugs of some kind. We call them June bugs. I don't know what they was. But anyway, Morris was hollering at all once he grabbed his throat and fell, see, and they held up the ball game, and we run over from the bullpen, and he was holding his throat, and everybody thought he had a heart attack, so they took him in the dugout and was working on him, and he was still holding his throat, and they was... Here, one of those June bugs that went in his and it's stuck in his throat. But the trainers were there working on him. Thought he had a heart attack. Finally, I guess they couldn't get it out, and they washed it down. I guess with water. I suppose. I don't know. Yeah, I remember old Quaker Bowl.
Did you pitch differently there?
Well, you had to. Mm-hmm. You had to, but. You know, the greatest tribute to a pitcher, I think, was old Cleveland Alexander pitched 16 shutouts in that park one year. Now, I know when I was there, I was only there, I think, one year. And the old pitchers used to tell me, if you ever pitched a shutout there, that was a lifetime of pitching, you know, if you pitched a shutout in Quaker Bowl. So you can imagine how great Alexander was when he pitched 16 of them there one year.
Was the dead ball, though, which might have helped.
Well, yeah, it was a dead ball, but still and all, that fence was only about, 260, 270?
I guess.
And,
I've never seen
that. Yeah, but it was high, and it was tin, see? It was closer than old league park in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how close that was. And it was shorter than that yet, even. Yeah,
maybe some kitchen, all right.
Yeah, they call that Baker Bowl. I call it Quaker. But it was Baker.
Why not?
Wasn't it?
Philadelphia, Quaker City.
Yeah, that's right. I called it Quaker Bowl. I don't know.
Did anybody call it that?
That's what I thought it was called. Was it actually Baker Bowl?
Yeah, Baker is the owner of the club.
Oh, I see. Well, I always called it Quaker.
You always call it Quaker?
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was called that, too.
Well, it could have been. I don't know.
It made sense. I never heard it before.
I'll tell you one of the nicest parks I ever played in, you may not believe this, was Forbes Field.
Yeah.
the hitters like Ford Field. I'll tell you why, on account of the background back there. Well, was you ever in Forbes Field?
Yeah, I saw one game there.
Well, you remember that background was green, that park over with the green trees, a good background for a hitter, you know, with a white ball coming out of there. And I know Wrigley Field in Chicago, St. Louis was the same way. They used to rope them out of center field, see, during a big crowd, when a big crowd. And first, they didn't in Chicago. And they didn't rope them out in St. Louis. That's where Dean used to come straight over. It was stiff. Yeah. He didn't come up like this. He would stiffen that leg and kick it up high. And I came up as a rookie. I thought, oh boy, how easy it would be to pitch him. To change speeds on your pitches, which you did a lot off your fastball, or a good changeup would throw him off, but it didn't. I don't know why, but I often wondered that. There was another hitter in the league too that I often wondered about, and I'd say to myself, if when I work him, I'll catch him between pitches. And that was Dixie Walker, Barry's brother. Did you ever see him hit? He'd go out like that, right at you, point that bat right at you. Right at you like that, and then he would come back. And I used to think I'll quick pitch him, you know, when he gets that bat out there, I'll quick, which I tried. And he always got that bat, he always got it around some way. I don't know how, but there was two hitters that, you know, just coming up, I thought, well, they'd be easy to pitch to. But they're all of them are different. They have their, some of them, you look at some of their stances those batters have, you think, that, you know, just looking at them for the first time, oh boy, this would work good and that would work good, but they could still hit that ball. And Harry was a great hitter too, Harry Walker. I roomed with him when I was with the Cardinals.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Harry and I roomed together. And then when my daughter was at Pittsburgh, we went over there one time and when he was managing Pittsburgh. And my daughter said, oh, she said, Harry Walker lives right above us. Why? I said, yeah. She says, you've got to come up and we'll go up and see him. So my wife and I and my daughter, we'd go up to Harry's house. But they were in on the road then. They were in New York. But his wife was tickled to death. We went in and chatted for quite a while, and Mrs. Walker. And she said, you come back over. Well, I never got back over then, see. And he was let go as manager over there. But
yeah, he had a... The reason he got fired was the other team had a batting out of order incident. He didn't catch it.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, I just saw a game this year up in Cleveland in June. Minnesota was playing Cleveland, and for eight innings, Minnesota, two players are batting out of order. And Cleveland didn't catch it. The ninth inning, they batted the right order. Everybody thought they were batting out of order.
Is that right?
So they protested, but it was too late. But that's what happened to Walker. I remember some.
Well, we played a protested game one time in Brooklyn. I was with the Reds then. And I think it was Linus Fry. In Brooklyn, the scoreboard's in right center. It's big high, it's a black scoreboard. Well, Fry hit a ball, and that ball stuck right on the side of that scoreboard, about halfway up, just like you would. And you could see it from the stands. I mean, from the dugout, it was white, that white ball on that black background, see. And the Brooklyn players, they were trying to climb it. One of them, I don't know which one. There was a man on base, a man or two on base at the time. And some of the infielders were out throwing their gloves at him. Fry, he just trots around and comes in and scored. Well, they had an argument about it. The Roacher come out, and everybody's arguing. It wound up in a fight. They played the game under protest. Well, here there was no ground rule on that, see. And they put a ground rule on it then. But that, I don't know whether that ball hit a nail that was sticking out of there. You know, it was
stuck one of the openings, didn't it? Probably.
No, it was on right on the bare wood. You know what I mean? Just like you wouldn't stick a ball on that wall. That's what looks so funny on that black scoreboard, that white ball. And then in New York, we were in New York the time at the when they first put up the screens on the foul line. See, that was a big Donnybrook up there that day. We were playing New York. Harry Kraft came up, and I think Major Kurth was the first base umpire. But I think Babe Pinelli was back of the plate. Anyway, I know Major Kurth was in on the deal. And Kraft hit a ball down the left field line there. Well, see, in the Polo Grounds, they got that marked in a white stripe clear from the top of the deck down. And the plate umpire called a foul, and Major Kurth came in and called it a fair ball. That's what started the fight. And that's when Billy Jurgis was playing shortstop for New York, and he hit Major Kurth, hit him in the neck. Because I was happy when it happened. They all ganged around, you know, and Major Kurth was a big man, you know. And he hauled off and smacked Major Kurth, because he gave him 60 or 90 days suspension. They suspended Major Kurth.
Major Kurth swing back?
No, but they grabbed him, or they were both mad, you know. And Jurgis was just a little guy. Yeah. What happened, I'll tell you what started. When Major Kurth talked to you, you felt like he was getting a bat, you know, you wanted to wipe your face. He had a neck about that round. He was about 6'4", great big burly guy. Well, him and Jurgis were arguing, see. That's what happened. Billy said it afterwards. He told McKechnie. McKechnie said, see, almost Billy hauled off and hit Major Kurth and then spit in his face. Well, McKechnie grabbed Jurgis and he said, what'd you do that for? He said, he spit in mine. And that's when he thought Major Kurth spit in his face. He maybe he did, I don't know. That's when Jurgis hit him. Then he honked up one and spit right back in Major Kurth's face. And then they both saw. Well, that game was played under protest. And that's when they put the screen up on the lines. That's what caused the screens to be put up on the lines. Because I think that's the way it happened, but the plate umpire called a foul and Major Kurth was either behind the pitcher and had run over, and one of them called it one way and one called it the other way. That's what started the rhubarb.
Remember that picture of in Brooklyn, this fan coming down the field?
We were there.
Were you there?
We were there when the guy just got out of Sing Sing. He was on parole, yeah, right? Out of Sing Sing. Had Major Kurth down the ground. Yeah, we were there that time, yeah. Heck yeah, I remember that as clear as
anything. What happened? What'd they do?
Well, the guy was either an escapee or a parolee or something. He just got out of the pen, I suppose. What's that prison? Is Sing Sing around New York?
Ossining,
yeah. I don't know what they ever did about it, but he had Major Kurth down on the ground.
Did he hurt him? Or?
No, he had Major Kurth to his throat. And had his fist up like this, I think. But now, I don't know, there was so many out there around when that happened. And I was trying to think what caused that. I believe it was that protest on that ball stuck in the scoreboard. I believe that's what it was. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like that's what it was. Since you mentioned it, I forgot about him being on. There was a picture then in the magazine.
Yeah, that's a famous picture.
Yeah, is it?
Looks like he's killing Major Kurth. Yeah. He's as big as he is almost.
He was a good sized guy, yeah.
But like he just came out of the stands, huh?
Yeah.
Did people see him coming? Or?
Yeah, there was people all over the field that day. I don't know, there was a fight that day. Now, what it was, I know one day up there a fight broke out. And Dolph Camilli was always played first for Brooklyn. Well, see, Dolph Camilli, did you ever see Dolph? He was a powerful man.
I saw him once or twice.
And his brother was his brother was Frankie Camel, who Max Baer killed in California. Remember in the fight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Maxie Baer, when he was fighting, fought this guy. What did I say his name?
Campbell.
Frankie Camel, and killed him in the fight. That is a ring fight, you know.
Yeah. Oh, a regular prize fighter.
Yeah, a regular prize fight. And Dolph was...
His brother,
Steve. But every time, I was on first this one day, and I always said, whenever a fight breaks out, I'm not getting near Camilli, because he had arms about like that, and he was a bruiser. So I was on first this day when this fight broke out. I was standing talking to Camilli. I got walked. And when the fight broke out, see, So I drifted away. And that was when I was with Cincinnati. And we had a merry-go-round that day, because I know Thompson got the tendons cut in his foot and his leg. And boy, there was really some... I hit somebody that day. I don't know. I always hit them behind, you know, and you walk around. But anyway, the fight I really laughed at in Brooklyn, I was with the Cardinals then, and like I told you before, there was a fight every time we went into Brooklyn. It seemed like the Cardinals didn't like Medwick. He'd been with the Cardinals. Well, they all hated Medwick, and they didn't like DeRocher. And when they went into Brooklyn, it was a free-for-all. By there, I don't think we ever made a trip in there. There wasn't a fight. Well, this day, Medwick was on first base, and he wasn't stealing. He was on a double play, I think. But when he went into second base, Marty Marion covered on the throw. And Medwick went in, boy, and he had both spikes right up in Marion's face. I mean, he went in there high with his spikes. I never will forget it. And when he was laying there on the ground like that, Marion walked over, you know, he was about 6'3", and boy, he just reached over, and Medwick is just coming up like this off the ground when Marion hit him. And he bounced back down, started up again, Marion hit him again, and by that time, Crespi was playing third for us. He was over there, and he smacks Medwick. He got hit about four times and never did get off the ground. Well, the two clubs met right on the mound, the Brooklyn clubs over here. It was just like a V coming out like that, and that's where the pileup was, right on the mound. So we had a bullpen catcher by the name of Sam Nairn. Remember him? He just joined us a couple of days before, that big Southern boy. Drawled, you know, big drawl. And we got in the clubhouse afterwards, and he had two of the prettiest black eyes you've ever seen. Well, what happened? Sam said, I was just down the bullpen. He said, I said, what happened, Sam? He said, I was just down the bullpen and walked up to see what happened, and Freddie Fitzsimmons hit him right between the eye. Boy, he had two beauties. But that night, they had police out there. Wouldn't let us out of the clubhouse till about 2 o'clock in the morning. They was trying to break that door down between the two clubhouses, you know. Hey, it was rough that night. I'm down you. But there was always a scrap over there. Now, when I was with Cincinnati, we had quite a few of them, but not like when I was with the Cardinals. Because that was a scrappy ball club anyway, you know what I mean, the Cardinal bunch. Mm-hmm. And they were...
People didn't like Medwick, huh?
Well, the club didn't like the St. Louis players, see. For some reason, I wasn't with them when Medwick was there, see. Medwick had left when I went to St. Louis.
I was thinking of generally, didn't people like Medwick at all?
But I mean, the St. Louis, the players, for some reason, didn't. You know what I mean? Now, why, I don't know.
I was wondering if the reason he did not get into the Hall of Fame until pretty late might have been some feeling towards him.
It could have been.
By the writers.
Yeah.
Because he was a pretty aggressive
type
of guy.
Yeah, he was a scrapper, yeah.
How about Frankie Frisch? Did you know him at all?
I knew him, but not as a player. Yeah. See, he was managing when I was...
How about Leo? Did you know him?
Oh, I knew Leo real well. I liked to play for Leo. I would have.
Yeah?
He tried to buy me for, gave me a Christmas for, I don't know, practically all the time I was with Cincinnati. I mean, he'd always ask me. He and Dressen both, see, Dressen was coaching for him at Brooklyn. They say, why ain't they pitching work with me, kid? I don't know. No, geez, they won't sell you. You know, I knew that the Brooklyn club was trying to buy me all along. And I always liked Leo, though.
Why would you like to play for him?
I knew I'd have got to pitch more to start, for one reason. And I know DeRocher, I liked him, and he was a good friend of mine. When he'd come to Cincinnati, like if he's making a speech or anything, I know I went out with him several times. You know, he wanted to know if I'd go with him. And I always liked the guy. I liked to play with him.
Good baseball man.
Good sound baseball man. And he was a scrapper. You know, Dressen was the same type of manager when he managed. He was the same type of manager as DeRocher.
He's got a book out, you know.
Who?
Leo.
Has he?
Yeah, it's Nice Guys Finish Last.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's him. But I tell you, he's this good sound baseball man. Well, he's been in the game, oh my God, what, 50, 40 years, probably?
Yeah. 27 or 28 he broke in, I guess.
Yeah.
Back to the
but I would have liked to play for Leo. Yeah, I sure would have. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you another guy I'd like to play for was with Chicago, and he tried to buy me with Jimmy Wilson. And Jimmy used to tell me all the time. In fact, he called me here a couple of times, wanted to know if, what's the matter out there? Why won't they sell you? I said, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. And that's one of those things.
Did you ever meet Powell Crosley at all?
Oh, yeah.
Has he had much to do with the players?
Not too much, no. Now, I mean, well, I probably did in the office, you know, but I mean as far as being around the players a lot, no. I've met him a lot.
Who were all your contract negotiations with? Gabe Paul?
Gabe Paul or Warren Giles, whoever. Well, it would be Warren Giles while I was there.
Yeah.
He would be the only one there.
Did you ever have any contract troubles?
No.
Never hold out?
No. No, it's not. It was different then than it is today. My gosh, these guys got lawyers today, haven't they?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, they got lawyers, managers. And,
yeah.
No, there wasn't much money involved. I mean, much trouble. I don't know of anyone. The only guy I knew who held out was Dean. He would hold out about every year. Diz. I think one year, what was it? He held out for 13,000 and won 31 ball games. Wasn't that it?
About right.
No, I think that's true that he held out for.
No thanks. I'll
care for some more coffee?
No, it's fine.
Well, give
delicious
me a little
sandwich.
Wait, just give me.
I can fix you another one.
No, that's fine.
You want another sandwich?
No, thank you.
Huh?
That's great. I don't want to keep you any longer here.
You're not bothering me. I'd just be in here fighting with her.
Well, it's been a great interview.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
You know,
life.
I think you live in one of the prettiest towns in the country, Marietta. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get down there?
I haven't been to Marietta. We went through there when I drive to Florida.
Yeah, it's a
that's been
town.
A long time ago, but I always said that's a beautiful town.
Yeah.
The way the trees and the part I went through.
Town.
Yeah. Yep, it's beautiful.
Well, I guess I.
The
can
word is.
Shut her off.
You mean. When they have this, don't they have the big races there, boats?
That was just 2 years. They had the big.
Well, they don't have it anymore.
The big rowing regatta you're referring to, yeah. Back in '49 and '50, they had it.
Oh.
But they had a couple of those, and they didn't have floods. But the river was very high both of those years. Heavy rains. Mm-hmm. It was a total disaster both years.
Is that right?
So they moved it back up to Syracuse, I guess.
Oh.
So it was a great idea, but just had bad luck weather wise those 2 years.
Okay, after that bit of bad luck, I'm back home here. This is the next day, next night. Wednesday night, August 6th, I think it is, 1975. And I want to finish up this tape with a little bit of commented caller on that Whitey Moore interview. I called him up on Tuesday night. I was planning to make a two-event day of it. I was going to go to Mrs. Mullins in New Philadelphia and see her Cy Young stuff in the morning maybe and see Whitey Moore in the afternoon since it was vacation. I called her up and she was unable to see me this week, and I'll probably go up early next week and see her. And so that knocked that idea out, but I thought later I'd go and see Moore anyhow, so I called him up Monday night. This was Monday night I called Mrs. Mullen, and I was going to try to make Tuesday this two-event day, but I couldn't get her set up, so I called Moore anyhow, and arranged for an interview on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. So I left here in a terrible fog about 7:30 yesterday morning, Tuesday morning, and intermittent rain, overcast sky, and drove on up to Urecksville. I ate breakfast at the Dutch Pantry in Cambridge, and then went on and got to Urecksville a little before 10, went into town there and stopped in the drugstore and got a film for my camera. And then I bought a nail clippers I needed too, so I cleaned my nails. Then got out to Whitey's house a little bit after 10. It was kind of a hilly, lower middle class neighborhood. Dead end street, this Washington Street. A rather nice home, but there was a big, and they're right on a river at the end of the dead end street where he does some fishing. There was a big kind of a street repair project going out across from the front of his house there. And I couldn't get up in front of his house because of it. The big digger was there, and he was out puffing his pipe in a